Commerce now come to order. It's 4:15 on, or 3:45 on April 13th, Friday the 13th. With us, we have Representative Thompson, Sadler, Johnson, Olson, Miller, and Holmes. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Two items on the calendar today. The first is Senate Bill 25. Ada, come on up, Fish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your real name for the record and your affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm a staff to Senator Liesl McGuire, who sends her regrets that she can't be here today but appreciates the committee holding a hearing on Senate Bill 25, which, for the record, I'd like to note is the companion to House Bill 357, and some members may have heard this previously under that version in the House Energy Committee. If I can, Mr. Chairman,
top of the spin.
I'd like to walk through the PowerPoint that you have in hard copy before you. Starting off on the first page, which says disclaimer, this was put in simply to reflect the fact that as we go through the PowerPoint, didn't want people to get bogged down in the specifics of the projects that I mentioned, because the bill really is not designed to drive specific projects, but rather the breadth of energy projects that are out there in the state of Alaska. So moving on to the agenda, what I hope to talk about today is highlights from selected reports about capital financing. This is sort of the phrase, the problem that Senate Bill 25 is intended to address, financing. Then I'll go into the sections of the bill, the powers and limitations of the fund that the bill purports to establish, and the decision policy calls behind choosing ADA as the vehicle. The problem, just to run through quickly, Mr. Chairman, is that there is significant capital investment that will be required statewide as the legislature has worked on energy issues over the past few years. I think that's been one of the clearest messages that both bodies have heard. What you'll see in the next few slides, starting off with the one that says Alaska Energy Pathway Toward Energy Independence, this was a report prepared by AEA back in 2010 that broke out capital needs statewide based on regional corporation areas. And as you can see, that the immediate needs in the first 0 to 10 years that AEA was able to identify were roughly $2 billion. The next slide is a selection from the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan, which was prepared by AEA in February of 2010. This shows you the different scenarios, but the takeaway from the slide is on the bottom right-hand corner that projected capital needs in the Rail Belt across the life of the plan are between $13 billion and $21 billion. The next slide came out of the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan, which, in fairness, has generated quite a bit of controversy, but identifies clearly that there are significant needs in Southeast for energy infrastructure projects, ranging from between $1.3 and $1.4 billion. So in the next slide, the summary, looking at the capital estimates out there, there are billions of dollars in infrastructure needed to be built within the state of Alaska in the next 0 to 10 years. Last year in the capital budget, there was legislative intent inserted in the energy section, which talked about the intent of the legislature to limit capital investment into energy generation not to exceed 50% of the total investment required to fully complete the projects. While this intent into the future isn't binding, Mr. Chairman, I think it's an attempt to recognize that the legislature would like to see some private sector money at the table in building projects, that it's not entirely the legislature's role or responsibility to fund 100% of the cost of the project. Senator McGuire, as she worked around the state through the energy process in the energy committees in the other body, heard from many utilities and interests around the state that the problem facing many of our utilities is access to capital. And what you'll see in the slide that says Financing Alaska Energy Pathway with this sort of chart shows you the dilemma that the utilities in the Rail Belt face, that there are projected capital expenditures, but their debt capacity is not large enough to meet these capital expenditures. So the next slide talks about the importance of financing, and the number that I would draw your attention to is on the right-hand side of the slide in the debt services percent of revenue. This is for a stylized hydroelectric project out of the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan, but just that a significant portion of the rates that Alaskans pay go through the utility back in debt service to the bondholders or the investors in the power project. So the challenge that Senate Bill 25 is intended to address is that with large capital needs and with limited budgets going into the future as we see oil production declining, the state of Alaska needs something that can be sustainable where investments in projects are repaid and then return money to the Treasury. So what Senate Bill 25 is designed to do is to create a new sustainable energy transmission and supply program within the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. And because of drafting conventions, Mr. Chairman, the next page that you'll see in your PowerPoint says Senate Bill 25 assets. What I've attempted to do here is to give a bit of a reverse sectional to the bill, because the material portions of the bill are towards the back of the bill. And if I can, I'd like to start off with Section 16 and 17, which are begin on page 11, line 5. And I'm happy to take questions if members ever have them.
Take a breath.
Yep. So starting off in Section 16, what this language does is add new sections defining a program within the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, creating a fund, and specifying how ADA can use the fund balances. The purpose of the fund is specifically limited to energy projects, and this was to give focus and clarity to the program. You'll see on page 12, line 3, the creation of the new powers and duties of this this Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Fund. The important ones that you'll see are on page 12, line 13 and 14. This is a new power that allows ADA to defer principal payments or capitalize interest on qualified energy developments. As members know, as you pay your mortgage.
Mr. Chairman, I do apologize. Sure. A lot of information is going by real quick. You're going to make a better, more effective case later if you just pause a little bit to sort of absorb some of this information. I'm skating over it.
So do you take 45 down to 33?
Absolutely, yeah. Mr. Chairman. So let's start back off with the powers section under page 12, line 3. Qualified energy development. By creating a new fund in ADA, the purpose of this section is to delineate the powers that ADA has as it relates to this fund. The fund has powers in addition to what ADA currently entertains, and the reason for that is the specific economics as they relate to energy projects. The additions for the powers for ADA are on page 12, line 13 and 14, which is the power to defer principal payments. The idea behind deferring principal payments is that an energy project might not have revenues during the construction phase, and so you can defer the principal, make the interest-only payments. ADA is still earning the interest that it's required to earn on the investment it's made, but you're not passing that through to the ratepayers. So it allows the drawing out of that initial phase during the construction to try and lower the cost of power ultimately to consumers. The other power that's important to the provision here is the power to, under its existing statutes 4488090, to issue borrow money and issue bonds. Unlike a revolving loan fund where the legislature puts a defined amount of money into a pot, that money gets loaned out, and more money is not available to fund projects until it's repaid. ADA has an ability to go to the capital markets and leverage the proceeds it has from loans to raise additional capital to refresh the fund. So the reason this program is sustainable is partly related to this existing power of ADA to go out and borrow money. The reason it's included in this section is to be very clear to ADA that they have the ability to use the proceeds and the returns on the investments they make to go borrow money against those proceeds, governed naturally by credit rating limits and leverage limits, to build a pot of money to invest in infrastructure. So the capitalization that goes into ADA is not necessarily the limit for the capitalization of what money can go out onto the street. And we have ADA here to walk through that in a little bit more detail as members have concerns about it. At the very basic level, power number one, moving back up to the top, these are basic powers for ADA except for one section in here, and this is line 12, line 6 through 9. They can use the fund to finance qualified energy development projects, ensure project obligations, but also to guarantee loans or bonds and establish reserves. This gives ADA a suite of powers to work with the private sector to create financing environments that will facilitate the development of the project. Often you might see private capital come in looking for a credit backstop from the state. ADA, the concern that's come up in previous bills where this sort of power has been trying to be given is that in those situations, the credit backstop came back to the state of Alaska. ADA is not an obligation of the state. They are distinctly separate as an entity. So the reason to establish a separate fund, the reason to establish that fund, and the reason to be allowed to give this loan guarantee power is to allow ADA, standing on its own, to support the economics of projects and work with the private sector. That's another way in which this is different than a typical revolving loan fund. However, in granting ADA new powers, it was important to the sponsor to put limits onto the power of ADA to work under this section. And so on page 13, line 5, you'll start to see the limitations on financing powers. This requires ADA to come back through the legislature to obtain approval if a financing exceeds more than one-third of the capital cost of a qualified energy development or a loan guarantee that exceeds $20 million. The additional power that's offered underneath that is that ADA is allowed to extend the life of financing to 30 years for a project. This is page 13, line 13. To 30 years for a general project. However, for a hydroelectric or transmission project, line 14 and 15, up to 50 years. Hydroelectric projects in particular are long lifetime investments, and the longer you can drag the financing out, the lower you can drive the cost of the ratepayers. The bill, as it was originally introduced, envisioned a much broader range of qualified energy developments. What you see in page 13, section 17, line 16, is a very definitive, narrowed group of projects. So a qualified energy development is defined as sub A, page 13, line 21, the transmission, generation, conservation, storage, or distribution of heat or electricity, or the liquefaction, regasification, distribution, storage, or use of natural gas. And finally, the distribution or storage of refined petroleum products. The sponsor's intent in these particular type of energy infrastructure are these are the sort of basic energy infrastructure pieces. This is your local gas distribution. This is your bulk tank farm for your generator. This is your power line. This is your hydroelectric project. And these are also energy efficiency projects. Those are the powers that were granted to ADA specifically within this section of the bill as a new and distinct mission for ADA. Those are the material sections of the bill. There are several other conforming sections that I'd like to walk back through if that's appropriate at this time.
Oh, certainly. Yep. We take a question right now. Yep. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on the qualified energy development, where we're defining what a qualified energy development is, I assume that could be owned by anybody. It could be owned by a nonprofit. It could be owned by a for-profit company. It could be owned by a local. It could be owned by the utility. It could be owned by a local government. There's no ownership limitations.
Representative Holmes, through the chair, that's exactly right. The point of ADA is to work with the private sector,
Yeah. And
that's the point of the bill, is to bring the state as a support for the private sector, but really put them or a community or a co-op or a nonprofit in the driver's seat for the type of if they have a project in the community that can pencil, This will provide access to that capital to make that project go forward.
So it could be any of them, anything from
precisely
for-profit, non-profit, you name it.
And Representative Holmes, through the chair, the thing that I would also add is that the purpose of ADA is statewide regional work, and so the bill is not limited to specific areas of the state. In fact, it actually is intended to provide the same type of financing mechanism throughout the state to communities that can make it work.
Thank you.
And that, Mr. Chairman, I think is a good segue into what is currently Section 6 in the bill, which you will find beginning on page 4, line 21. This statute defines the mission of ADA. And what you'll see throughout this section is the addition of the word energy, conforming language to what legal wanted to do was to clean up the state versus Alaska, and correcting language on page 5, line 11, to reflect that the United States Export-Import Bank is no longer referred to as that, but rather the Export-Import Bank of the United States. So legal took an opportunity to do some revisions as the bill was coming through. Adding energy into ADA's existing statutes is the inclusion in the mission to match the fund that we're creating specifically to deal with energy projects in Section 16 and 17. The next sections, which in the bill are Sections 10 through 14, beginning on page 8, line 22. The underlying premise of the bill is truly that what Alaska will do is take some of its assets, some of its capital, invest it through ADA into infrastructure in the state. The principal and interest payments will then come back to ADA, recirculate through ADA back to the state in the form of the dividend. Fundamental to that concept is that ADA cannot give out money and so must earn a rate of return on the loans or investments it makes. What you see in Section 10, page 22, through Section 14, which is page 10, line 15, is in all the different ways ADA is able to work with the private sector to invest or loan money, a requirement that ADA get an interest rate. And so these are conforming changes, saying that the new sections that we've created, the Sustainable Energy Transmission Supply Fund and 4488-700, has to comport to the same interest requirements. So this isn't free money. This isn't low-cost money. This is the cost of capital. These are loans, but as you'll see as we dig into the letters of support, right now utilities in the state of Alaska are borrowing money from outside of Alaska, and the interest and principal payments are leaving the state. What this will do is circulate those interest and principal payments in-state, allow them to work with a local entity, and get the financing they need.
Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, and you were talking earlier about the, I'm just wondering about the interplay between this and you were talking about the 30 to 50 year rate and the idea that if you have obviously a longer loan, you can lower and spread the costs over a longer time so it's not all hitting one section of ratepayers, but instead it's over the life cycle of the project. And how does that intertie with, what are the interest rates under these sections? What are the sort of parameters that they can use?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, I'd like to defer that to ADA because okay. They're pegged to the cost of funds and the market rate,
okay. Which
you will see on page 10, line 8.
Thanks.
Beginning there is that I'm sorry, Representative Holmes, it's page 9,
okay.
Line 18. Within this section, you will see at the very bottom, line 31 talks about the cost of funds.
Okay.
Means the earnings expressed as an annual interest rate the authority would receive on a comparable financial security, and for a loan participant with a fixed interest rate, the cost of funds must equal or exceed the minimum interest rate. So there's a floor on the interest rate ADA can offer. However, the next section I'd like to turn you to is there is an exception under which ADA is allowed to offer a lower interest rate. And that policy call was made on page 10, line 16, within ADA's existing interest rate statutes. So ADA is allowed to reduce the rate of interest by up to 1% under current statute to meet sufficient job creation, rural development, or other economic development incentive criteria. What we've done in this bill is add the phrase renewable energy development, and that's to express, given the state's policy to move towards renewable energy and hydroelectric, particularly being renewable energy, that you can have a lower interest rate of up to 1% to finance those projects. And that's just trying to conform with the policy that the legislature itself has put in place.
And to clarify, Mr. Chairman, in here when we say renewable energy, we mean the Alaska definition, which includes hydroelectric as opposed to the...
Representative Holmes through the chair, that's correct.
Good. I assumed...
In combination, now I'd like to step back to a few other sections. So the purpose of the bill, establishing this new program within ADA, taking Alaska's assets and moving them out at a competitive interest rate, the ADA works very closely with commercial lending institutions in the state of Alaska. So the bill was not intended to create an uncompetitive environment with the banking institutions. So what you'll see in the next section, which is Section 8, which begins on page 6, line 23, makes conforming amendments to ADA's current loan participation program. What currently happens is that commercial lending institutions like, say, Wells Fargo, First National, make loans, and then ADA comes in as a credit backstop and buys loans off the books of the banks up to 90%. You see that number on page 7, line 4 to 6. which is that ADA must retain at least 10% of the principal amount of the lending institution must retain at least 10% of the principal amount of the loan is retained by the loan originator. The insertion of qualified energy development and energy efficiency allows the private sector to continue to make loans should they wish in the energy space, work with ADA through the normal loan participation system so that ADA is not crowding out the private sector in its work doing credit backstops, loan guarantees, or direct loans itself. So the reason this section was included in the bill was to keep that consistent. So here we've created a state agency with increased finance powers to finance the energy space. You want to keep the private sector able to compete and work with ADA so that you're not pushing them out of the market. Finally, Mr. Chairman, we need to move to sections 3 through 5 of the legislation, which were added in the Senate Finance Committee, and I believe this committee had a particular challenge to take a look at. And section 3 begins on page 2, line 3. These sections are intended to allow when ADA builds a facility or there's an interest in an ADA facility in a community that is exempt from state or borough taxes, that value is deducted from the full taxable value as determined as it relates to the base student allocation and funding in the education program. So that change is actually made on page 3, lines 24 through 25. In our education statutes, there's a local mill requirement and a local contribution that goes towards the required, there's a required local match for the state contribution. This bill would exempt property owned by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority from the tax base against which that 4 mills is calculated if it is exempt by a local city or municipality. I see.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and without me having to look, does this retroactive to the properties already owned or only new properties which are financed under this program?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, this acts retroactively in that it doesn't ask for additional money for previous years. What it says is going forward, if you have infrastructure in your community, that your community has decided to exempt from taxes, so that community is not raising money from it, the state isn't going to deduct your education funding that you would be by requiring a higher local match. And the concern going forward, I think, on a policy level is that if the bill works as it is intended and energy infrastructure is built in and around communities and a community for economic development purposes decides on its own to exempt that from property tax, they could lose school money because of the way they've set that up from the state. So that is the
conform. Do you have an opinion on that by chance?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to work to get that to you. I don't have one at the tip of my fingers.
But you do have one in the building. Or you have asked for an opinion on
it? I've not asked, Mr. Chairman, for a specific legal opinion. That has been within the creation of the fiscal note that came to this bill, I believe, 8 o'clock last night was where they finally defined it. There was work with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development with Steve Van Zandt, the tax assessor over in the other body at the Senate Finance Committee when this provision was put in. And there was an earlier permutation of this language. It was a general exemption that created problems for the municipality of Anchorage because it was not an elective. And so this was the new language that was drafted in consultation with the municipalities that were affected.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for the record, you said elective. Does this mean this is voluntary if a community does not want to exempt?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that's exactly right. In particular, the municipality of Anchorage, which, as you know, has the FedEx terminal, which is owned by ADA, the taxable value of that property, the municipality, is quite a valuable asset. So they would not choose to necessarily exempt that from property tax.
Can I follow up? Is there the ability to pick and choose, where if a municipality chooses to only exempt the, and let's use FedEx, but not another project in the community, they could do that, or is it everything, is it an all or nothing, all in?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, it is up to the city to pick and choose which one, and that is the point of the phrasing, excluding property owned by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, that is exempt from city or borough tax. the exemption of city and borough tax is up to the city and borough. ADA property of itself is not exempt in the regular tax statute. That was the way the original language was attempted to be drafted, which created that type of exemption, which creates problems for municipalities. And I'm happy to share that communication train with the committee going through that problematic language to lead to this language, that led to this language.
Yeah, if you email it to Conrad, we can get it out to anybody that wants it.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Unless it's stamped secret.
Even if it is.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think with that, that is essentially the legislation, and I believe I've actually, through the process, covered the general gist of why ADA was chosen, and that was really that ADA returns a dividend, that ADA has to collect interest, and that ADA is the commercial lending institution. I believe that is essentially the legislation, except to turn to this last, second-to-last slide in the PowerPoint, which shows the general flow and the concept of how the money moves through the proposed capitalization. I'm sorry, third to last page. And just in a simple walkthrough, step one, the state establishes the fund, which the legislation does, capitalizes the fund through what in the fiscal note is proposed at $125 million, which was the first tranche of money. Then ADA uses those proceeds to, through financing mechanisms, support energy projects. The return from those supports or investments comes back to the fund, and because ADA has the ability to borrow money, that money go they can then go out to the credit markets and refresh the capital fund. And step four, return a dividend back to the state of Alaska. And as we see, last fiscal year, that was $29 million. In members' packets, I've included the most recent credit rating report from S&P about ADA, but feel that they can more strongly answer the questions, particularly their due diligence processes and the mechanics of how ADA works, than I can.
Who's got the first question for Fish? Representative Salvage.
No.
Nope.
Boy, no, I need to be more thinking.
No questions?
Lots. I just can't formulate them that fast.
Well, we'll get the aid up, and then you're going to circle around, aren't you, Mike?
Absolutely.
Somehow I thought so, but this time of year, I never take anything for granted. Come on up, Mark. Welcome back. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm a deputy director with ADA. Wanted to just give you an overview that what this bill does is provide several new tools that ADA could use to finance qualified energy projects. And what are those? The first one is a direct loan program. Right now, in this, what's been described by Mr. Pulaski, is a secondary loan market program. That is, the banks or a credit union bring a package to ADA, the loan arm. ADA can take up to 90%, but ADA doesn't directly deal with the customer. That is, we go through the banks. With this proposal, you could do loan participations or direct loans for energy, so that if a utility needed a loan, ADA could conceivably make that loan. And to answer Representative Holmes' question, that could be any type of utility. That could be a rural electrical cooperative, a nonprofit, or for-profit. The other thing it does is it
ensures... if the entity already has existing ADA loans? Is there an aggregate for all ADA loans within one entity?
Well, one of the limitations of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is that one-third of the capital is the maximum from ADA.
Could be for all projects aggregate?
That would be the way I would read it.
Okay.
And you mentioned it could be any utility, so it would have to be a utility.
It could be other projects.
I thought it could be other groups.
But the next thing would be to establish reserves and to provide insure project obligations or loan or bond guarantees. And right now, ADA does not have that power. We do not have an ability to provide a credit backstop for someone else's paper. For example, what could happen now is if a utility like GVA or MEA wish to borrow, they can go to the capital markets, and they have done so, and those can be a little expensive. They can also issue bonds, but they may have limitations on their bonding capability. What this would let you do is they could issue a bond, seek a bond guarantee from ADA. ADA would then apply its rating, which has been described to you as that AA rating, and the bond should issue at that rating. That could substantially reduce the cost of the bonding to the utility, and hopefully, if the underwriting is correct, the bond will be paid for, and there's relatively little risk to ADA for its guarantee, but the guarantee just drops the interest rate. So that would be beneficial to the ratepayers. The other thing this can do is that it allows us to work with outside capital. Right now, in this economy, there are people that want to invest that are in pension funds, insurance funds, and other types of vehicles that use to invest in investment-grade real estate, in the stock market, in bonds, or in T-bills. I just checked T-bills. They're at, they're 2%. They're about the same price as natural gas. So no one's investing. So we've been in contact with several of these firms. If this bill were to pass, they could put up 100% of the funds for an energy project if they could get a credit backstop to provide the kind of risk adversity they need. So again, this a reserve fund here could be used to leverage out other people's money to attract outside capital into Alaska for energy projects.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Davis, I don't pretend to be a financial guy, and I'm odd that you're felicity with the numbers and concepts, but are the tools that would be proposed to be given to the Energy Transmission Supply Fund, like direct loan participation, direct loans and loan participation, would those be useful tools for the other business units of ADA to have those same tools? Or do they already have them?
We have, Representative Sadler, the chair, we have loan participations with limitations on debt equity ratios that we do on all kinds of projects. Yeah. And in fact, we traditionally do them on commercial real estate, but we're doing them on other types of projects, and that's one of the things I'm doing right now. We do not, however, have any kind of guarantee or credit backstop for any ADA program at the present time.
Would those be helpful to you? If they're good tools for this, would they be useful for other purposes?
Seller, hypothetically only, given the current capital markets, it could be useful. I'm not advocating it for that. The other thing, what you do is that another tool is that allows us to defer payments for capitalized interest. Essentially, that's the term of patient capital. It's one of Director Leonard's favorite phrases. And that's true. You do need that. And so sometimes you can take interest only for a while on a loan or on an arrangement and lower the upfront costs and then capitalize interest on the back end, and that can be useful, especially with large projects. Energy projects tend to have high beginning costs, and then they tend to flatten out over time. Mm-hmm. That's very typical of that type of project. So it makes sense for an energy fund to have that tool. Another tool it has, which hasn't been addressed so far, is to allow ADA to work with public-private partnerships, and that's the language at page 12 that allows us to, for example, enter into build-operate transfer agreements. And, for example, what you could do there, if you had a utility set up, you could use outside capital to finance the project and then take out that construction loan with other financing, provide a credit backstop for the takeout financing, and then transfer the ownership of the project on a leasehold to the utility to operate while retaining a security interest in the project to provide security for the financing. And so those kind of provisions allow you to do that. That's very typical of commercial financing. It just isn't done by a state agency so far. So these kind of tools are useful. Because what you're going to find in current capital markets is what we call layered financing, a bunch of different pots of money because no one wants to take that much risk anymore in anything. So people want to put in a little bit. We also could go out to the market to raise money with this bill, or we could lend at our current rates. And Representative Holmes had the question, our current rates. The current rates for loan participations, which are the same for the loans that could be made here, are 6.10 for fixed, whether it's 5 or 25 years. The term doesn't matter right now given current conditions, and 5.07 variable. Again, no difference in term. Those are market indexed to the Federal Home Loan Bank Board of Seattle, which is the entity that tends to lend money to banks in Alaska, so that's why we picked that entity. Mr. Fauske, for example, is on the board of that entity, so there's a lot of connections with Alaska. And so we're tracking our interest with the Federal Home Loan Bank itself. So these rates would be competitive. That is that we're not undercutting local institutions. That's not the idea. So that
Representative Thompson.
Yeah, I was just curious. I know that I've heard comments out of GVEA that they weren't really interested in dealing with ADA because they're going to end up paying 6%, where they can still go out and borrow at 3 to 3.5% at the present time. Does this make it so that you could be more competitive, or is this still going to be the standard?
Representative, that's a good question. If ADA went up to the bond market right now and raised funds just for a loan, it would be below the rates that are now market indexed from the Federal Home Loan Bank Board. However, there's a capital energy fund, and then RUS money, both of which are available to GVA, and both of which can run in the range between 2 to 3.3%. Those are below market rates. And we don't wish to compete with those, and certainly those are good rates. I think the other thing you might see, though, is that you might see a utility use those kind of rates for what they can, how much they can use them for, and then fall short. This bill would allow another way to finance the rest of the project, and that's going to become a problem as the cost of projects go up and the financing gets tighter. For example, there's a lot of demand on RUS right now. This could provide another way to get you over the hump.
Follow-up?
Yeah, it just seems like you're still talking in the 6% range when they're looking at the lower end of the 2.8 to 3.2% or so. I mean, that's what I was hoping that this was going to head towards, was trying to make it where it's more for Alaska projects in Alaska, using Alaska money, that it would be more competitive.
Well, Representative Thompson, it depends on how you structure it. If, for example, if you look at what is being borrowed by one of the local utilities to build a plant right now, they're paying in excess of 7%. And if they had used a bond with ADA issuing the guarantee, that would have floated at a AA rate, which would have been considerably below that financing. So it also depends on whether the utility that's building the structure has access to those bought down federal rates, and some do and some don't. But the utility you mentioned, GVA, does have the ability to use those two funds.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what type of risk exposure would the state have?
Representative Holmes, that's an excellent question. I think we'd have to maintain good underwriting standards, which ADA has done. In the current loan participation portfolio, we have a default rate of less than 1%, and our rating is over a AA. So we'd have to put in ratings that make sense. For example, debt coverage ratio is probably in the range of 1.25 to 1.34 on the loans, but it would be, a target. And our net present values would be, in the range of 1.1 to 1.3. And maybe that's a little technical, but that's what I do.
Any further questions for Mark?
I do.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we're guaranteeing up to 25% of a loan, basically. Are we backstopping the whole loan, or is it just the 25%, and what is that going to do to our bond rating? Because even we're on the hook for it, whether or not, I think the credit rating agencies look at that, that's the 25%, that's the number you're on the hook for, and that's how they evaluate your ratings and stuff. So am I misinformed on that? And if I am, fine. If I'm not, can you tell me what it's going to do to your rating?
Representative Johnson, sir, the way this is set up, In the 700 section, the new section, is to set up a brand new fund within ADA that's totally separate from the Development Enterprise Fund, which is now the basis for the loan participations and the development project funds. It would be separate so that if this bill were to pass, one of our first tasks would be to go see the rating agencies, explain that separation, explain the limitations, at page 13 of the bill on how much we can lend and what our tools are, and seek a rating for that fund. So, and the bill is designed not to affect it in any way the current ADA rating in the Development Enterprise Fund. So this fund would have a brand new rating.
So you don't know if it's double A or what, and you're not going to be depending on ADA's background because you're setting up a separate fund. So you're just getting a rating based upon 125 million or whatever the number ends up being in the bank.
Representative Jones, that's correct. But also, of course, we put forward our underwriting standards, which I described to Representative Holmes.
Right.
We describe our internal controls, which we have on how we do projects and how we approve projects. We have a project review commission and a credit commission and all those processes, and then the way in which we manage the one portfolio fund in the past. And putting that all together, we would ask Fish, Moody's, and Standard for rating.
Question. Thank you. Along the same lines, is there anyone who's done this before and we can kind of get a look at what they think? I mean, a lot of people have good standards and a lot of people do good business practice. That doesn't mean that you don't make bad loans. And has anyone set up a fund like this and then looked at a bond rating that you know of?
Mr. Johnson, Chair, I'm not aware of anyone actually being – I'm aware of them being set up but not actually done. Michigan's got one in process right now, and we're watching that. It's a little broader than energy. It has more infrastructure. Otherwise, it's really the same concept.
Yeah.
And there's also one going forward in New York. But right now, we would think that the rating that ADA has overall would probably apply to the new fund if the same underwriting standards apply. This bill will help develop energy projects, but it is not a bottom-down system. It's the rates are going to be competitive. The underwriting is going to be very tight, I think it should provide a fairly good rating.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, can you tell me the difference in an interest rate in a double A or an A bond?
Right now, there isn't that much difference. I think they're less than a couple hundred basis points because there really aren't very many A or double A's out there. A lot of states have been downgraded to junk bond status or quadruple B, for example, California, Washington. So
is California still a B?
It's a 4B. The last time I checked. Which I felt was a very polite rating.
Okay, thank you. And my concern is that we don't set up something that, we're going to be able to issue bonds, but they're not going to be competitive, and they're not going to be able to guarantee. We don't have ADA or the state behind them.
Correct.
So, those are my concerns.
It's a very good question, Representative Johnson, to the Chair, and one of the first things we will do is contact the rating agencies. We've got several consultants we've hired to work with this bill, if the bill passes. And I've already had some conversations with them back east as to how we would lay out a program to get a rating.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess to go along with it, you've already done some work on it. Is there any, can you get a pre-approval basic concept, or do you have to have the bill in place? Is there any way to go out and say this will be a double A bond?
Representative Johnson's chair will have to have the bill in place. But the consultants, their view is that these should be A rated bonds. At least A rated bonds.
At least A?
Yeah.
Okay.
And one reason is the market. There are relatively few states that entities that have that rating. We have one, and they often look to the management and the underwriting standards of the entity, and we already have that in place. So we will tell them that this new money from the state will be handled in the same fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question,
Representative Miller.
I'm afraid to even ask this one because I'm a little out of my league on it. Where do those ratings for bonds come from?
A rating for a bond that is a general obligation bond of the agency would come from the agency's rating or the fund's rating within the agency. Okay, thank you. And that would be a matter of the agencies doing their review and providing their rating. a revenue bond or a conduit bond is rated by the the credit snapshot of the project, which is funded by the revenue bond rather than the issuing agency.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we issued revenue bonds for Providence Hospital recently, and those bonds went out based upon the ability of Providence Hospital to repay those bonds at that rate. So they looked more at Providence Hospital's ability to repay and not at ADA, because ADA's credit's not involved. Now, we can do revenue bonds for energy projects if they have a strong revenue stream, and we would certainly use that tool.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Davis, I'm looking at page 12 in the list of the powers and duties of the authority. And again, like my colleagues across from me, I'm no expert in financial matters, but would the financing capabilities offered in this through this fund be sufficient or appropriate for a development like the Watonis at High Dam? And if so, which of these are might be applicable? The question I'm trying to get to is the proposed amount of capitalization sufficient for a huge multi-billion-dollar program? How much leverage can you get from the amount of money we proposed to put in this fund originally?
Representative Sadler, let me break your question into 2 points. First, could this be used as part of the Sutton development? It could, not the whole dam, because that dam would be billions of dollars. But, for example, you might want to build the transmission line from the dam to the grid, which is, and the ADA can be used to do that. And then ADA's bond rating would be used to build that transmission line, which might be a lower cost than AEA's ability to finance that same transmission line. Another issue, you may need an access road into the dam, and ADA is authorized to build industrial roads in aid of energy projects. So, again, you could form a PPP to build access roads. So it could have some impact on the dam construction. You also asked a question on leverage, and I checked with one of our consultants, actually two of them, one of them, affiliated with Harvard, and the other one is a former Harvard professor, I'm not prejudiced, even though I think I went, Mr. Holmes and I went to a better university, they tell me that the ratio should be about 5 to 1.
Okay. Is there a sweet spot for the size of project, or is it going to depend on what kind of tool you use?
Representative Sadler, good question. The larger the amount of capitalization, obviously, the more leverage you have and the more ability to do bigger projects. But the purpose of this is to have $125 million this year, as I understand, $125 million this year and $125 million next year, so it eventually end up with $250 million. With a conservative leverage of 3 to 1, you can see you could probably finance quite a few significant projects. You also, I think this is going to be used for pieces of projects, like the dam, the transmission line, or if you're looking at Fairbanks, it may be a part of a project to lower costs in Fairbanks. It won't be the whole project, but there'll be parts of it that are a little hard to finance, and that's where this bill would fit in.
Very interesting.
Any further questions for Mark?
I do.
Yep, Representative Johnson.
would you consider... I mean, if you're looking at a project and you can only do 25% of the funding, and you take the dam and the infrastructure as one project, or would the power lines be a separate project, or how would you go out and determine 25% of what?
Representative Johnson, that's a good question. I think if it was a transmission line, that's a standalone project, so that would come within the one-third limitation of the bill, and then so each would have to be a development, become a development idea, and each one would be discrete. So they could all go toward the same overall large project, but I think each one would have to be discrete. One way you'd look at that is the markets would tell you that the investors who wanted to invest would in fact define where they want to go with the investment. And by working with the private sector, I think you'll overcome the pressure to do more than you can do this.
Okay. Thank you. And if I could follow up a little bit. And where would the roads fall into that? Would they be able to be financed? And I'm not jumping to the conclusion that a transmission line is a state-owned project yet. I'm still thinking that it could still be private. So
That's the whole project, I'm hoping. So would roads be part of that as well? Because you can't build a power line without a road. You can't build a dam without a road. So is that separate of this, or would that be on the state to build that? And how would you envision that would not be able to roll into this as a 25%?
Representative Jones, through the chair, I think in an access road for the utility project and the line could both be financed through the structure of this bill, but it wouldn't be the state building it. The way this is worded, SB 25, because ADA would have only one-third into the project, we'd be right. looking for partners in the private sector, whether utility or a consortium or a banking institutions, that would want to invest in that transmission line for a rate of return. So I don't envision these as being projects that would involve state direct state funding.
Okay. And I just want another example. If in fact the steam generation power across the inlet that was being drilled that I'm not sure is panned out, they needed money for a road. Would that also be eligible, even though there's no transmission line, or there may be a transmission line in that one too? Would that be the same thing?
Mr. Johnson, it would depend on whether it met this definition of qualified energy development.
Okay.
And you know that what you just posed would be the kind of thing that would probably get referred to the Department of Law, quite frankly.
Okay.
And say, does that cover it? But, you know, that's one thing we routinely do. We do confer a lot with the Department of Law to make sure that what we are proposing to finance fits within our statutory definition.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, but that was probably a good example because there's 30 miles of road. But right, 30 miles of transmission to get hooked up to Beluga.
Yeah, yeah. And that was exactly the question because the dam's not going to have that much. But I think it's closer to 60 miles of road and not that much transmission line. There's differing. I just want to see where this fits into a project because I'd hate to have a project finance and not be able to build a road or, you know, something along
those lines. Well, Representative Johnson, I think that's really what this bill would kind of do is it provides that ability if you've got the financing, the big financing underway, you always have bits and pieces in any project. And I think the public-private partnership is directed at those kind of parts of a project. Like the Long Mountain Transportation System at the Red Dog Mine,
yeah.
where you can generate a revenue stream and pay off bonds.
I've got to throw this one in there. So if we put tidal generators in the footings of Kabada, would Kabada qualify as under this?
I'm Representative Johnson, to the chair. I think that would definitely need to go to the Department of Law.
Just trying to help my friends.
Didn't you just say at the Department of Law, Mark?
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mark? Thanks again. Ted, you here for questions or comments or both?
Both.
Come on up. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and
yes,
welcome back.
To the chair, this is I am Ted Leonard, Executive Director of ADA, and I'm here to answer any other questions that the committee may have, and also to state that ADA's management has looked at these type of tools before as we're looking at other infrastructure projects, and our consultants have stated that these tools would be very valuable for ADA to have and to look at into the future. So we believe that these tools would be helpful to the state in filling that gap in financing for energy projects. And Chair, just really quickly on the interest rates again, just Mark did a very good job, but how ADA works on its interest rates is if we fund a project or a loan out of our internal funds, we go to the rates that Mark talked about, the 5% for variable and 6.1 for fixed. And right now, the fixed on those type of rates are based on our floor, which is our interest earnings over a five-year period. So the reason those were put in is because for probably the last 10 to 15 years, Mark, I believe, We actually haven't gone out to the market to fund loan participations. So on very big projects, if we were going to do a loan for a project, we would actually go out to the market and issue a bond. And when that's the case, it's the bond rate that we get plus about 25 basis points for our cost of funds of managing it. So, for example, right now, a tax-exempt bond, which would probably go for utilities, I think 30 years, about 3.3%. You'd add 150 basis points, so it'd be in the 4.5% range. And again, like what Mark was saying, the tools that could help a utility that can get to that very, very cheap money is that you can add the credit backstop that would allow RUS to look at them more favorably. But I can tell you most of the IPPs could not get those type of ratings for their projects. Only the co-ops and the municipalities can tie into that type of very less expensive type of capital.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Forgive me a basic question. I think I understand the concept a little bit, but could you speak a little bit more about what a credit backstop is and how that would work?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler. Credit backstop works in essence is that, especially on, for example, a bond guarantee that we could do, is you're actually putting the fund as the backstop. In essence, you would be guaranteeing a certain portion of the payment if the entity fell through. So if everything goes great, then you never use that credit backstop. How usually that works is you'll reserve a portion of the fund for that backstop, and then you charge a certain amount of basis points to give that insurance. In essence, it's insurance.
Co-signing your kid's car loan.
Yeah, there you go. Kind of thing.
So, Except getting paid to do it.
Can I understand it as collateral, or would the loan you could get based on that be the collateral? Is it directly the fund, or is it one step removed from the fund?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, it's really one step through. What would happen in a credit backstop if ADA ever had to step in, then in essence what you're saying is we will go after the project proponent for the funding. So we would pay what they didn't pay that year, then we would have the collateral of the project as our backstop. So in essence, we're taking the worry away from the creditor. And as Mark said, we've been looking at infrastructure projects, for example, roads and major port infrastructure, that there are many consortiums that are out there willing to invest in very low rates right now, the 5 to 7% range, as long as they had some type of backstop because of who they are, insurance companies, pension funds. You know, they're willing to look and take a lower rate over a long period of time as long as they know it's a safe bet. And that's where they'd look at an agency like ADA to give them that safety that they need to take the lower rate of return.
These are kind of conceptual, free-floating questions. What is the risk to ADA, to this kind of new fund, this new transmission and energy supply fund? Is there, excuse me, is there a risk that we, not that we overextend, but what are the downsides? I hear a lot of good ones, but what's the risk?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, it would be a risk that we take, in essence, in every project that we invest in. If, in essence, what you're doing with the credit backstop is taking the risk, instead of us actually investing all the money and then that being at risk, we're backing the money that's being paid. So our risk would be that if the project failed, the same risk we'd have if we invested the money directly. Okay. It's just the ability to leverage our monies, and you have to manage that through your reserves and how you invest.
And would this actually, with your permission, would this help you diversify? I mean, getting into a whole new sector like energy as opposed to commercial activity and construction and so forth, does this help ADA?
through the chair to Representative Sadler. I'm not sure that it helps ADA in its current mission due to the fact that one of the things that this does is that it does not affect ADA's current mission by putting it into a separate fund.
Okay.
If there were deals that did go wrong in this fund, it wouldn't affect the rating from the ADA Development Project Fund. And, of course, vice versa. There's a firewall between these two funds. So, as Mark said, we would go out and get a new bond covenants for this new fund that would be different from the covenants we have in our development fund.
Okay.
Thank you. And Mark is the expert on that, but that's my understanding. And the reason why we were looking at a separate fund so that the ratings in the one wouldn't affect the other. Like Mark said, when you look at ratings, though, they look at management, they'll look at our underwriting and our general assets, but they'll be concentrating, my understanding, is on this fund and the new capitalization for it.
Okay.
So, Ted, when you underwrite the project, are you underwriting for the amount that you're going to participate and then add in the backstop?
To the chair, depending on what type of layered financing you would do, yes. And one of the things that Representative Johnson was talking about is I would see in certain projects that ADA's development fund could look at, say, an industrial road as a separate project to the transmission, so that there could be, you know, we could look at it through our development fund. Also, if it made financial sense to invest in our development fund. And also, the one other thing is that if there was a project that ADA thought was very good for the state, it, from my understanding, is that we could come to the state legislature and say that it would be better to invest more than 30%. But that would be at the will of the legislature, not ADA.
Is it safe to assume that you have a pretty good idea which projects are going to be more likely to come in on budget than over budgets? I'm guessing docks probably don't have a real good history, bridges, but you know, roads or dams might have a different likelihood of this.
Right. To the chair, I think that this definitely would be a safer fund than the development fund, in essence, because as you work, especially on direct financing, a utility, for example, GBEA, when they go to a project, they're getting a rate, you know, the RCA at the same time. So they're guaranteed, in essence, that even though ADA's backing it, the ratepayers are backing ADA. So most of these type of projects would have the RCA involved and the other utilities. So it's, in essence, just helping to get better rates due to ADA being there.
So it'd be safe to assume you would write regulated utilities all day because of the likelihood that you know you're going to get paid.
You bet. Well, in essence, if they need the capital, of course, that you have to look as how many projects come in, what the capacity of the funding is. But, for example, we know that, for example, with the Prince of Wales Island, that there's several mining interest right now that if there could get a hydro, which they're looking at, hydropower in Prince of Wales would really make those mines actually pencil out and be very good for the state in rare earths and also in copper.
I like it.
Yes.
Hey, Mikey.
Rare earths. Not a band.
Any further questions for Ted? You all done?
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks again. Not yet, Kendra. We have one person online. I'm going to open it up to public testimony, and then I hopefully close it out real soon. But Dan Bockhorst, are you with us, Dan?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee. It's been a long time since I've heard your voice. Are you still with the Local Boundary Commission?
No, I'm not. I'm currently the borough manager of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough.
That's probably why we haven't heard from you lately. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Thank you. I know you've had a long day here. I'll just take 60 seconds to explain why the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough is supportive of Senate Bill 25. Senate Bill 25 provides for a common-sense solution to a glaring public policy concern of the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough. As hopefully you are aware, the state of Alaska owns the Ketchikan Shipyard. It's an ADA-owned facility. The state of Alaska has a multi-million dollar investment in the shipyard. In order to help secure the financial viability of the state's investment, the Ketchikan Gateway Borough has exempted shipyard operations from the borough's property tax. However, under current law, the borough's required contribution for our school district is not adjusted to reflect that exemption. In other words, the borough helps ensure the state's investment in the shipyard, but the state fails to recognize that effort and penalizes the borough by reducing education funding to the borough school district. It's ironic that the more money that the state and federal governments invest in the shipyard, the greater the penalty that's imposed on the borough. In fact, over the next 3 years, the penalty that the borough will suffer if this Senate Bill 25 measure is not enacted will triple what it currently is. Sections 3, 4, and 5 of the bill correct the problem. The borough urges your support of Senate Bill 25. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony.
Any questions for Mr. Bockhorst? Thanks again, Dan. Is there anybody else online that cares to testify? No. Anybody in the room? No. With that, we will close out public testimony, and we're going to carry this bill over tomorrow. We're expecting one amendment, one clarifying amendment, and I anticipate that we will be moving it out tomorrow. Next item, and thank you, gentlemen. Next item is Senate Bill 136. Come on up, Kendra. Your turn. And like the record reflect, we've been joined by Senator Bill Welikowski, the sponsor of this bill. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Welikowski. I'm State Senator serving Northeast Anchorage. And I have a caucus starting in just a few minutes, so I may have to leave. But I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules. To, and I'm going to turn it over to Kendra, if that's okay.
Definitely your excuse.
Good call. Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and the committee members. For the record, Kendra Kloster, staff to Senator Welikowski. And so now I can start from the beginning. Just a little bit of background on why this legislation had been introduced. As of June 2011, 1 million veterans were unemployed, and the jobless rate for post-9/11 veterans was at 13.3%. This gets even more difficult when you're looking at the young male veterans age 18 to 24, where we're seeing an unemployment rate of 21.9%. I've actually been doing some more Google searches recently, and some of the statistics that are coming out now are looking around 30% for the young male veterans ages 18 to 24. So I've been in touch with DOD as we're confirming those numbers right now, Department of Defense. And during November, we also held Senator Welikowski held a meeting with the military and veterans, a town hall meeting, and this was the number one thing that we kept hearing from veterans is we're coming back and we're having a really difficult time finding employment. So this was actually an idea that they had brought to the senator, and so we've been working closely with them. Senate Bill 136 will create a $2,000 corporate income tax credit for a business that hires a veteran, and a $3,000 tax credit for hiring a disabled veteran. They must be employed for 12 months for at least 1,560 hours, which comes to approximately 30 hours of work. You can also have more than that, but we just kind of wanted to set some standards there. And also a $1,000 tax credit for seasonal employment, and that was brought forth by a number of individuals who have seasonal employment. The Hotel Association, who was interested in this legislation, asked us to put that in. I will stop right there, and I know there's a number of different support letters from veterans organizations, Vets Helping Vets, Vietnam Veterans of America, a number of different businesses. So I will answer any questions you may have.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this may be obvious. Is it per employee or a one-time $2,000 or $3,000 or $1,000 credit? I mean, is it could it be $3,000 per employee if you had handicap? Is it cumulative?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, yes, it's per veteran that's hired. And I just want to make one clarification as well on that. Mm-hmm. The seasonal employment, one of the things was if you hire, it was just for that first season. So if somebody keeps coming back, they're not going to get that $1,000 tax credit each time.
But it's $1,000 if you have a full-time veteran, either handicapped or not, and they continue, it's not one time for that person if they continue employment. Is it per year? Is that the way it works with a full-time employee? Or is it a one-time, first time you're hired and that's it kind of thing?
Correct. Representative Johnson through the chair. It is a one-time. So you would get the, when you first hire the veteran, they get that one-time tax credit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you.
You have some vets in your district, don't you?
Just a few, and then several looking for good jobs. Kendra, bottom of page 2, let's see, line 29. You say it was this is going to apply to veterans who are honorably discharged. Did you consider making it to under honorable conditions, which would also include a general discharge, or did you specifically want to make it honorably discharged?
Representative Sadler, through the chair. We actually were specific in the honorable discharge, and this actually came with working with some other senators in the body who were veterans, and it came at that request and through discussion with them.
Okay. I know there's some other provisions of state law that extended to honorable and general, okay. So it's a high threshold.
Is there a mechanism in the bill that will prevent stacking of vets, where an employer could hire a vet and then fire them in a few months and pick up another one and do it over and over again?
Chair Olson, what the bill does is it'll specify that you have to be hire the veteran for at least 12 months before you're going to get that tax credit. But it is per veteran that's hired. We did not limit it on how many veterans that the business might hire, but they would have to work at least 1,560 hours within that 12-month period. And they do not get a tax credit until after the 12. They've been there for at least a year.
Any further questions? Representative, I know it. Representative Sadler.
It's not 5 o'clock yet.
We're going to run until we get through the testimony.
I would just make an observation that hiring veterans can be good sense and good business sense, and I strongly suspect that a business that hires a veteran will get not only the tax credit, but will probably double their money in terms of their productivity. These guys and gals get up early, go to work early, and work hard all day. Sometimes way past 5 o'clock, so it'll be good for business as well.
Any other questions for the sponsor? Thank you, Kendra.
Thank you.
Anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I guess that's half our public testimony. For the committee's knowledge, we've got Joanna Bales online for any questions from the Department of Revenue. And with that, I'm going to go out of the building to Albert Howard from Angoon, Mayor of Angoon. I hope I'm right. Are you with us, Albert?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Albert Howard. I'm the mayor for the city of Angoon. I'm also a veteran. It's safe to say that I represent, there's 480 people here, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be willing to bet there 20% of them are veterans, whether they're male or female.
I'm looking around.
First of all, I'd like to express my appreciation for the time and effort being put forward for our veterans to serve our country at every corner of the world. These young men and women, given their marching orders, and if not done right, their best friend pays the ultimate price for our country to ensure our freedom. The choices we make on a daily basis to keep our country, states, and communities moving forward in a positive direction. In many ways, we say welcome home. Thank you for service to our country and our people. Senate Bill 136 does just that. It ensures they have kept their word as they protect and serve our country. And we are truly grateful community, state, and nation. Most veterans I know do not want handouts, so providing them with a better than equal opportunity for employment allows them to continue the American dream that young men and women that join the armed forces believing will be there when they come home. When a person joins, they give up some rights. While serving, they understand that and join anyway. Some of those rights are left in the hands of those that make policy that have an impact, positive or negative. Senate Bill 136 is positive on their behalf. For that reason, I am here to support Senate Bill 136. Thank you for also supporting this bill.
Mr.
I would like to encourage all senators and representatives to keep in mind as you debate whether or not to support Senate Bill 136 that our men and women are in harm's way and busy doing their jobs and trusting that we are doing what is right for all. To support the efforts of Senate Bill 136 will protect and maintain the same, if not better, quality of life for our veterans that have given time, sweat, blood, and at times tears with their get-it-done attitude so we can continue our day-to-day business. Thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this process, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Howard, if we'll put you at ease a bit, at least 33% of the people at the table today on this end are vets. But thank you for calling in, and if I missed, did I miss you? You a vet?
Did you miss me?
Yeah, are you a vet?
No, I miss you.
Okay, 33% of the people at the table are a vet, and thanks again for calling in. Is there anybody else online? Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Joanna? With that, we'll close out. Close out public testimony. And
I have some more questions. A few.
We've got Kendra.
Kendra, thank you. Is there anything in this bill that says that if you have a corporation in Alaska and you employ a veteran outside the state of Alaska, that you still qualify for the credit? And I apologize for not having a lot of opportunities. These things are coming pretty fast and furious now.
Oh, no problem. I understand. Yeah. You guys are very busy. Mr. Johnson, through the chair, on the first page, line 6, the states employs the veteran in the state. So we're specifying that they are veterans that are hired in Alaska and working in Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, that doesn't mean if you're hired in Alaska, it doesn't mean you're working in Alaska.
So I think what he's referring to is if they were working in, hired in Alaska and working in North Dakota.
pretty good example.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I'd had this conversation with Don Bullock when we were drafting this, and that's something that where we put in the state of saying that they were working in the state, and through those conversations of making sure when we're hiring veterans that they weren't working outside. So that was the exact actually question that I had brought up to him to make sure they're in the state, and that was from my understanding of listening to him when talking with our legal department, that language was supposed to clarify that. And I can double check and follow up with him and get back to you.
Follow? I'm not sure. Because I think if my understanding of what I heard you say is if you hired somebody in Alaska and they went outside, they would still be eligible for the tax even though they weren't working in Alaska. Even though they were Alaskan residents. And then the other part of the question is, if you're not an Alaskan resident and you come up and get hired, are they still qualified?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, when drafting this and talking with Ledge Legal, those were, like I said, many of the questions I were bringing up. And we didn't do a distinction of saying we had a constitutional problem as we were saying that it must be an Alaska veteran. So that's why in some of the language that we had changed when going through the different drafts for the CS, that we said hiring a veteran in the state. So our intention when drafting this legislation was making sure that it was a veteran in Alaska that was working in Alaska. But I was told that there were some problems if you were going to specify that it had to be an Alaska veteran or using that type of terminology. And that was coming from the Legislative Legal Department.
Mr. Chairman, and I have been down this road many times, and this is the one area that I want someone to sue us. I will love to go to court defending Alaskans, hiring Alaskans. If we win, lose, or draw, that's what I'll finance. I don't want to go to court on a lot of stuff, but fighting for the rights of Alaskans is one I will support all the way to the Supreme Court. So I'm not scared away by the local hire stuff. I want someone at some point to challenge us. And I want to fight that, and I want to fight it on behalf of Alaskans and citizens because I think they're wrong. Yeah. Interstate commerce speaking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Want to fight it on this one? Or
no.
Just checking. It's not my intention to move the bill out today, but we're going to be hearing again tomorrow.
Yeah,
so
I have to go play.
Perhaps you can get... is there any legal documentation that you have that's not part of the packet?
Chair Olson, no, I don't have any legal documentation that I have not provided to you, but I can talk with Ledge Legal and we can address that during the next hearing. But I do want to make a statement that, you know, Senator Wilikowski is very dedicated, and his intention too was making sure, you know, for its Alaska veteran hire. And I know he stated that numerous times and many different types of legislation that he's been very dedicated to making sure that Alaskans are getting the jobs, and that's the intention of this, as far as Alaska veterans are getting these positions.
I have a simple solution, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler, followed by Representative Holmes.
Thank you. I should bring this up today rather than tomorrow. Would I know from the legislation I've worked on that the Veterans Affairs Office in Alaska would very much like to make sure that all veterans in Alaska are signed up and can get whatever VA benefits federally they can. And to that end, we've had some legislation language to require them to offer them the opportunity to register. Businesses that would get this credit from employing veterans, long way around, would you be amenable to a conceptual amendment that would require employers that receive this credit to have their employees or veterans apply for veterans benefits and register with the State Office of Veterans Affairs? Basically, if they're going to get veteran benefits for being a veteran, this would help the employer by possibly relieving them some of the medical health care expenses, and would, of course, also benefit the veteran by having an closer contact with the VA so they could get information about benefits available to them. So, long way around, would you consider a conceptual amendment that would require that notification?
Representative Sandler, I'm happy to talk to you about that in more detail and see what we can come up with.
Just want to get that out today rather than tomorrow. We're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, she's going to be off the hook shortly. With that, we've got public testimony closed, and it is 5:10, and we will be hearing both these bills. Pardon me? You got some more comments?
Real quick, if you don't mind, I just got handed a note by one of my trusty staffers in my office that says Don Bullock says that in Alaska, not in other states. So,
could you repeat that again?
I will get have Don Bullock come on the line, but I was told that for the veteran in the state being hired, that it says that is in Alaska only, not in other states. So when a veteran is hired, they get the tax credit when they're hired in Alaska, not in another state.
Representative Holmes.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, when we're looking at it's page 1, lines 5 and 6, it says a taxpayer that hires a veteran and employs the veteran in the state. And I think the fact that they have to both hire them and employ them in the state, I would assume that by using both of those terms, it's intended to try to be as clear as possible that the person has to not only be hired here in Alaska, but also has to be working here in Alaska during the time and can't be working elsewhere. I'm assuming that's what that language means. So I would read it.
Representative Thompson.
Yeah, to kind of satisfy Representative Johnson's wishing that it was an Alaska resident. If you went to line 10 on page 1, and it said they must have been unemployed in Alaska for more than 4 weeks. If you had that in Alaska put in there, and they've been unemployed in Alaska for more than 4 weeks, Alaska has a residency of 30 days, so they would definitely be an Alaska resident. But if they have, you know, if they've been employed outside somewhere, fly up here and 2 days later get hired and say, I've been unemployed for 4 weeks outside, they wouldn't be an Alaska resident. So they're unemployed in Alaska for 4 weeks. They would be considered an Alaska resident.
I'm thinking we might have to do more language than that, because I've been unemployed by the state of Maryland for about 35 years now. if you take my meaning. I don't know. I like the idea, but I don't know that that language would fix it yet.
Representative Sadler.
I think I may have a solution. If you want to address residency, look to page 2, line 5, and line 9. You could simply insert for a veteran employed in Alaska for 1,560 hours, and line 9 for a veteran employed in Alaska for 600 hours. That doesn't address the unemployed, but it certainly addresses that they had to be working in Alaska to get that. So they'd be hired from Alaska, working in Alaska, and we'd also specify for the full time.
Well done, Dan.
Glad to say the magic words, conceptual amendment.
Kendra, do you have anything else?
No, I think that we've discussed pretty much everything. I did want to end maybe like with this quote. As I said, I've been doing lots of Google searches, and this was one of the one that kind of really touched me, and I just want to leave the committee with this. It was an individual, a soldier that was coming back, that said this, a conversation between a governor. He didn't say he was the most worried about facing the enemy in the night. He looked at me in the eyes and said, Governor, I'm worried about whether there will be a job for me when I get home. And I think that this was really telling, and one of the reasons why we're trying to do different things as a state to support our veterans when they're coming home, to make sure that they are employed. And this is just, I think, one of the ways that we can help them. So I really appreciate you taking the bill today.
Thank you very much. And we'll be, I suspect, moving this bill out of committee tomorrow afternoon, 3:15, same time. And with that, we will adjourn.